Rebecca Harris from Embedding Wellbeing says, knowing about the prevalence and effect of trauma and adversity, we simply can't focus on educating the students in our schools with a one-size-fits-all approach. We see the impacts of trauma every day in classrooms. These impacts might be labelled as a behavioural issue, bad parenting, school refusal, lack of engagement, or perhaps even a diagnosis. Frequently, students are suspended or expelled as schools either don't know what else to do or simply don't want to deal with complex and challenging students. Welcome to the Child Charmer podcast, Rebecca Harris. I am so delighted to have you here. Can we just reframe bad parenting? Whew, let me breathe on that one as someone who had lives and breathes through raising children who have endured adverse childhood experiences. We are so delighted to have you here on the Child Charmer podcast. A really big focus of the podcast is celebrating and embracing unique brains, and we are so excited to learn from your wonderful brain today. You're an education consultant, author, and counsellor, and a trauma-informed work is a really big part of everything that you are living and breathing. Can you share with us a little bit about what are you doing out there? How are you changing the world for children?
Just one step at a time.
Day by day, baby.
Yep. Look, I feel just so passionately about this topic and really about the power that schools have to positively impact children's lives. And I worked for a number of years in schools and 8 years in student wellbeing. So really that was big. It was big, big work and really important. And so now really more what I'm doing is taking a step back and supporting the people who are doing that coalface work, as well as doing some one-on-one counselling, which is so delightfully contained compared to working in a school. And then, yes, my book, Safe to Learn, is really a passion project.
We'll get to the book because I have a copy of it in my hot little hand.
Good.
I've been recommending it to all the school leaders that I'm working with, because one of the things that I'm really trying to achieve with the podcast as well is bringing in incredible humans and experts who specialize in different areas connected to education so that we can learn and grow from them as well, right? Because it's one thing we know for sure about trauma, it is complex. So let's kick it off with what do we mean? And when people say this to me all the time, what does trauma-informed actually mean? So what do you mean when you say trauma?
I think it's always worth sort of clarifying, because I think traditionally we've thought of trauma as a thing that happens to people. It's a really, you know, a one-off dramatic event, traumatic. Yeah. But what we're learning more and more and more is that it's much more complex than that. And so the definition I like to use is something along the lines of when we are in a position where we perceive something is so overwhelming that we are unable to cope, that is traumatic. Right. So when we think about that in context, if you're a child, if you're an infant, if you're a baby, so many things are so overwhelming, particularly anytime your number one person or people who are there to keep you safe, if the impression is that that's not working, that's traumatic. So what we know is the younger we experience something like that, the more impactful it is. And I did an amazing postgraduate qualification in developmental trauma. So that's a real passion for me, because I think it often goes sort of under the radar. You don't see it. You don't necessarily know it's happening. And I in no way ever want to be a parent blamer, but we know that life is difficult for a lot of people, and that a lot of people live with lots of adversity. And I think it's really important to point out that the way that our society is structured, can be traumatic for people too. Living with poverty, racism, homophobia, ableism, all of that can be traumatic as well, because it is so overwhelming, it feels like we can't cope.
And I think that's why, Beck, it is so complex, is because it can covers off so many different areas in life, right? And the way that I often describe it to people is, you know, it's like any diagnosis or any label. When we just start to look at it as a nervous system disability, or the way that your nervous system is impacted every single day in any environment, you know, then we can stop worrying about so much of, well, what's actually going on here if we're talking about children, right? And so I love that you touched on developmental trauma, because I do feel like there is a really big misconception out there in the wider community, especially in the adoption and permanent care community, which I am heavily involved in, that people often make assumptions, but your kids were adopted when they were babies, you know, they're in safe, loving homes and they haven't faced adversity. And one of the biggest things that we have to advocate for is educating teachers, because we know our kids really struggle in education, in understanding that it's not so much about where they are now, but where they've come from. And
exactly
how that plays out now, you know, and as their brain grows and develops, we more things unpack and all those sorts of things. So it's about just being really mindful and empathetic and understanding about that. And I think that that's where, you know, what I said before about bad parenting, it's got nothing to do with parenting. You know, a lot of these therapeutic parents are absolutely amazeballs. I'm sure you meet many of them as well. And so really, I often say to families too that, you know, therapeutic parenting or working with children who have endured trauma is more about a state of being than doing, right?
That's right. And like you mentioned nervous system, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, that saying states become traits. We might look at children and think we're looking at a personality trait or, you know, like a habit that they've got that they can break. But, you know, these are often born of nervous system responses that are unconscious and that were established when, you know, the brain was just full of little neurons firing and wiring together. It takes a lot to shift that early impact.
The good
forever.
News is, though, yes, we keep working on it. The good news is, you know, that we have such an opportunity as parents and teachers to really support these young people to continue to grow their awareness that the world is safe, right? And that I can feel safe in your presence. I can feel safe in this classroom, or I can feel safe at school. So what impact can schools actually have? And I know there's a lot, but what impact do schools and teachers have when they are just one part of the child's life?
I think one of the things that I say about schools all the time is for a lot of families, they will engage with a school when they might not engage with any other support services. So kids go to school generally. Most children will attend school. How wonderful. What an opportunity to reach so many children and young people.
Mm-hmm.
So even just thinking about the numbers, like how many hours a day, a week, a term, a year, schools get to engage with children. It's a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during those busy weeks, sometimes kids spend more time at school than they do awake at home. We have so much power to start to create these narratives for children about themselves, narratives about themselves as belonging, as a learner, as valued and honored and cherished.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Schools, and so schools, and I think this is something I talk a lot about too, is that schools are about so much more than reading and writing, aren't they? They're a community. They're a place of community where we, like you said, where we belong, or we start to develop our sense of identity. And for many of our kids, our ACE kids who have endured adverse childhood experiences, they have already endured so much loss in their young lives. that, feeling like they are connected and that we've got schools and teachers who are on their team unconditionally, that never give up on them, that are committed to walking alongside them, navigating some tricky stuff, big behaviors, all the things. But oh my goodness, I wish more teachers actually understood the pivotal role that they actually play for these kids. And I often say to teachers, the work that you're doing, say for example, with a kiddo in prep, won't fully, you may not fully feel or see the impacts of your work in that year, but you are an integral piece of the growth and development of that child, right? And this is why when we have kids and we allow kids to stay within school communities, we see the growth. We see them just shining and growing into their own little human beings. And those teachers who've worked with those kids previously can look at those kids and say, wow, I was a part of that.
Oh, it's so great when that happens, or when you might get a little a visitor come back after having left grade six,
Oh, I
come
love
pop in
it.
a few years
I
later.
love it.
It
I love
is
it. I
it's
love
incredible, and
it.
we don't always get to see that, like you
No.
say. And you mentioned therapeutic parenting, and I just think schools can be therapeutic environments too, even
Absolutely.
when when children aren't lucky enough to have a therapeutic parenting experience, even when we know they're going home to really difficult situations. What we can do at school is provide that therapeutic environment, which, absolutely we don't necessarily see the results of, but you can feel it when you're with them, how
And
important it is.
doesn't the research tell us too that one of the things that actually counteracts adverse childhood experiences is what we call positive childhood experiences, which means that outside of the family unit, children have at least two other trusted adults who think the sun shines and rises and sets with them. Do you know what I mean? And so I think that teachers listening to this podcast, I think, you and I are both passionate educators. We know how important the work is. But for any teachers listening, I hope you know how important you are, not only to all kids, but especially these kids, because they will remember you. Trust me.
They do.
I still have kids that I've worked with 20 years ago, Beck, whose mum's now following me on Instagram. They send me photos, and it's so beautiful in a way having that public platform. It's, pros and cons to everything. But, one of the mums sent me a beautiful message of a child I worked with who was turning 21, saying, could you send him a message? You're still his favorite teacher and he still talks about you. You know what I mean? And so it
Amazing.
really is incredible work that we're doing when we view it through that lens of we are growing up a child's brain. And we are an integral part of that growth and development and rewiring it for these kids who have endured so much. So, how can teachers know if they are saying or doing the right thing for students who have experienced trauma?
Yeah, I think one of the things I love doing is talking to teachers and boosting them, because the bottom line is you don't need to have, a counseling qualification or be a psychologist to do this work, because the work is relationships. So the power is in the safety that you create within a relationship. So I think what teachers can remember is that being present to kids, being themselves, being authentic, reliable, consistent, but also knowing that sometimes they're going to muck up and that they just need to name that and everyone can move on, that they don't need to be infallible, they just need to be authentic. And that's where safety comes from, doesn't it? If you're connecting with someone and you know that they're being authentic with you, it feels safe. When
Oh,
they're,
and these kids, no, mate, their spidey senses, these kids radiate. They are, part of their heightened sensory systems and, heightened threat responses is they read the room very, very quickly. And isn't that's what relational safety is too, isn't it? It's like, it's almost like I can feel what you're projecting and I know if you don't like me and I know that you might be feeling nervous right now and it's okay to say that too.
That's right. And look, I talk about unconditional positive regard all the time, because I think you don't have to, be the number one fan of every child in your class, but it's essential to have unconditional positive regard for each of them and for their families. And that promotes compassion.
Yes.
And that's actually a lot easier to live and work when you are feeling compassion for everyone around you. And, you know, there's some really important research around our or educator expectations too. We need to have the expectation that our students are going to succeed. And when we get to know our kids really well, that just happens.
Amazing. And I think too, what it's like one of those things too, some days these kids will come to school absolutely humming, and other days, you know, we can't even get them to sit down or whatever it might be. And I often talk to teachers a lot about adjusting expectations is not lowering expectations. It's about meeting the need of the child on that day. And how do we still provide that relational safety so that they go home still feeling like we've got their back?
That's right. And expectations, I think, you know, can be around growth. That's what we want. We want to see growth. It doesn't matter where kids start. We just know that when we nurture them, they grow. And, you know, we all have those rough days. It's so interesting, isn't it, that we expect so much sometimes in schools because we've got a system that doesn't meet the needs of individuals. So we want everyone to be doing the same thing. But, you know, meanwhile, who hasn't had those days at work where you've had a little cry in the toilets or had a little meltdown or said something where you thought, oh, that shouldn't have come out? You know, we absolutely
they're
need
all
to,
human, baby.
We are. We need to adjust. We do need to adjust out for ourselves as well as for our students. And, you know, naming that stuff when it happens is so powerful too, that modelling for kids.
Absolutely. So we know that these kids can bring some really complex behaviours to the classroom, or what I call big behaviours. Do you know what I mean? It's like they, sometimes you can hear them before they enter the room kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're loud. Often they have a pervasive drive for autonomy. They, you know, they have this insatiable need for safety at all times. How do trauma-informed classrooms then help students who have those big disruptive behaviours?
I think a lot of the really key things would centre around relationships. Relationships, promoting safety, knowing we're not always going to manage it either. You know, we can't just say, this is a safe space in our classroom. We can just do our best, and promoting that sense of belonging. So I think there are a lot of things that teachers do really instinctively, and a lot of things that they can do just to boost those things too. So all social emotional learning is helpful because it's giving a framework for behaviours and responses and promoting compassion so that kids understand themselves and each other, and there's words to talk about it. I think belonging is really important, and I think there's lots of really simple things we can do too, like, you know, like the birthday list up in the classroom. Every child's name is there. Everyone is a part of the class. And I think the, you know, any classroom that has a special thing that just they do, you know, the song that just they know, or the little catchphrase that they use, you know, it brings that sense of belonging and connection for kids. And the bottom line is trauma-informed practice is really about having an awareness of the impact that we as adults have on children, the impact that nervous systems have on each other, and bringing compassion into every interaction that we have. And that's actually good for all students. It benefits everyone. And
oh,
it means
absolutely, absolutely. And I think I've told you this before, but I'm trained in the Berry Street training as well. So I'm a qualified Berry Street educator. And obviously, just, you know, as you know with teaching, too, you learn so much on the job. Like,
yeah.
So much of it is trial and error. Oh, that didn't go well. Like, my beautiful son's teacher the other day learnt the hard way that we don't scare children who have a trauma background, not even as a game, because it activates their threat response. Do you know what I mean? And so we are going to get things wrong when working with these kids, and they're so unpredictable and every day looks different. And I think that so has to be fundamentally part of our understanding when working with these kids. But safety has to be paramount for everybody, right? And how do we support these kids in those moments where they are dysregulated or overwhelmed or flipping chairs or whatever it might be, to make sure that they're safe and all the other kids are safe and obviously that the teachers are safe as well. So one of the things that I talk to teachers about as well, I know we had this in your beautiful quote about how suspending these kids or actually sending them home at the point of escalation is a real missed opportunity for repair, for the child being able to come back from that overwhelm or dysregulation, repair the relationship with the teacher or the kids or whatever it might be, and then reintegrate back into the classroom. And what I find in a lot of schools is that that is when kids are cut off. They're cut off at that pivotal moment of, for the opportunity for growth for the child. What are your thoughts around that?
It's a really interesting thing to talk about, I think, because I understand those situations from all the perspectives. I think obviously de-escalation and returning to some kind of baseline, it might not be calm, but it might be getting a feeling of safety back. Is what we have to go into those situations aiming for immediately. That's what we're trying to do. There is no point trying to connect with the brain. There's no point trying to do repair while the child is still escalated. But we know repair feels good and it does really help. And that I agree with you, it is absolutely the ideal scenario that calm, I say calm, dream scenario and opportunity for repair happens there at school. It's not always possible, but I think when it's not, it is vital that the message is we start fresh tomorrow. And I think those sorts of catchphrases just need to be really clear all the time. We always start fresh. We always start fresh.
Absolutely. And the way that the child leaves the school and the messaging that they are given is
Yes,
so important.
it is.
Things like, today was a really tricky, mate, but we can't wait to have you back tomorrow.
Yes.
Or even if we do have to give kids a day, a rest day, we call it a recovery
Yep,
day, not a
absolutely.
suspension. Today was really hard. Let's all take a break. Let's refresh ourselves. Let's come back in another day and let's give it another crack. Do you know what I mean? And
Perfect.
the messaging that we're giving kids, and I mean, I live from personal lived experience, Beck, I can tell you, when you've sat in meetings where people say things like, you're going to have to learn to conform, you can't belong here if you can't follow the school values. I mean, all of that negative messaging for a child that is displaying distress behaviors does nothing to help them grow and learn.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree that messaging is so important. And what I see and what you hear and what you just know, right, when you live in a community or you work in a community, is that the kids with those tricky behaviors all end up going to the schools that do that beautifully, and the other schools push them out. And
Correct.
we know that happens. And it's really not fair because certainly funding for schools does not represent
Okay, and so can I say
that.
on that then, the complexity around that is all of a sudden, then we get all of these kids moving to the school that's doing all of the great work, and then those teachers can't actually do their job properly anymore because they are. Oh, there's so much demand for the work that they're doing. So what we hope to see, and what I constantly talk about to people is the inconsistency between schools. It's like, well, how can we have teachers and school leaders understanding more about trauma-informed practices so that we're all doing it? Do you know what I mean? It's almost like it needs to be
Yes.
universal at a leadership level. I mean, we're preaching to the converted here, and I'm sure everyone listening is nodding along, going, yes. And often we see teachers trapped in schools where their fundamental beliefs around trauma-informed practices is not supported by leadership.
Yes.
And so that becomes incredibly difficult. Do you know what I mean? And so I coach teachers as well to and talk about, well, okay, well, how can you as a team support these kids in-house? You don't have to call leadership every time there's a problem. You know, how can we work together, especially if there is a misalignment with leadership or the messaging that these kids are receiving? So I don't know. Sometimes I think, you know, teachers, we're incredibly creative. We're always good at problem solving and trying to always look at things through a different lens and how can we do things differently? And I think that where there's a will, there's always a way, right?
Yeah, and that was absolutely when I started writing the book. What I was thinking to myself was, and what I talked to the editor about was like, what I want to be really clear is whole school approach, yes, ideal, best practice. If it's just your class, amazing, do it. You can have an impact. If it's just, if it's your team, fabulous, do it. Because I think, every individual working to these aims makes a difference. But I think the inconsistency is a real challenge, and it's not something I think that's talked about enough. And we don't, I was reading or catching up on all the media around school refusal or school can't, and schools don't consistently, I think apart from Victoria, even keep data about suspensions and expulsions and or no, around when students aren't coming to school. And I know that in Victoria, then the department doesn't have answers for you when kids aren't coming to school, but at least they're collecting the data. But we're not even sort of looking into it in more depth. And there needs to be much more depth looking
There's a real
into,
missed opportunity there, isn't there?
yeah,
And
yep.
I think that, you know, I love that about the whole school approach because the research does tell us that kids that are embedded in school communities as they move through the entire school continuum, if they are getting that consistent messaging, we will absolutely see a reduction in incidences around aggression and challenging and disruptive
Yes.
behaviors. The research is in, right? The more consistency we've got, the better off these kids are. And I love that you said that. Like, you can only do what you can do in your classroom, but if you can even come together as a team of four, or a team of three, or a team of two, you know what I mean? And often these kids require more than one person because
Yeah.
they require a lot. They have really high support needs. And so if we've got a colleague or an ally, or we're team teaching with somebody else who is fundamentally using the same language and the same trauma-informed
Yes.
approach, oh my goodness, this kid is getting double whammy, right?
That's right. That's right. And when we can work together, schools and families, we're really doing incredible wraparound work then.
Absolutely. And that collaboration, as you sort of touched on, between parents and schools is so incredibly important. Often there is the complexity, though, with some of those kids that the parents aren't on board, and we know they're never going to come on board. So we can only do what we can do.
Yeah,
You
and
got any, can you talk to that a little bit?
that is really tricky. I've always found that really difficult. But again, what a privileged position to be in student well-being, or to be a classroom teacher or an education support staff member, and have the privilege of connecting with a child, even if there aren't parents coming to you and wanting to engage and find out more. It just reinforces, I think, the importance of people at school and potentially shifting a narrative. I have worked with a student many, many, many years ago whose parent called them the bad one. It was a big family. Don't worry about this kid. That's the bad one. So how important it is then for that child, as an example, to come to school every day and see our faces that are saying, "So glad to see you today. What's going on? Let me check in at lunchtime. What are you doing with your friends? Great work." Reworking on that self-narrative, because self-narrative can be so easily damaged, and we need to just do, so many repetitious, positive self-narrative touch points with kids, and then we can start to shift that. So it's more important, I think, even when parents aren't being the advocates we wish they might be, even though it's probably the real advocates who we are listening and responding to. We need to watch for those other kids
And
as
you know, I say that to my son's teacher every year. This year, you are his advocate. Every year, I hand that over, that privilege over to you to, you know, work with him and work alongside us and to be that nervous system support that he so desperately needs. I'll never forget them at our beautiful school we're at now, but the first year we were there, he needed a lot of co-regulation. And his beautiful teacher, I bought her a spa package for Christmas because it's like, thank you for being the nervous system regulator. And you've done a lot of co-regulation this year. And I am so grateful to you for being part of our team. So
I
it was
love
so
it.
beautiful. Yeah, it's
Go
so
and
beautiful.
relax.
Yeah, totally. All right. So tell everybody, where can they find your beautiful book? It's such an easy read, guys. I'll hold it up so people can see the cover. Safe to Learn, Embedding Trauma-Informed Student Wellbeing Practices. It's a great read. It's not too long. It's not too wordy. And one of the things I love about your work and people say about me is that we make really complex topics easy to digest, right? Because we live in a fast-paced world. You ain't got much time to be reading these days. So where can people find you? How can they work with you? And where can they buy your amazing book?
Well, the book is published by Amber Press, so you can get it through Amber, AMBA, or Booktopia, Amazon, lots of
All the
places,
places.
all the places. And I love that you said it was an easy read, because that is the feedback I get more than anything, is it's accessible. And I think that role, absolutely, that we play as translators from complex information. And I do hurt my brain trying to understand it and put it into simple words. I think that is really important. And otherwise, people can find me on the embeddingwellbeing.com.au website, which has got information about my work with schools and private counselling. And there's information about where to get the book there as well, and some resources and that kind of thing. But yeah,
Thank you
reach
so
out.
much. Thank you so much for
Thank you.
sharing your incredible brain with us today. We are so grateful for your knowledge, your passion, your inspiration, your unwavering work in this space for kids and families, and teachers. And we are just so happy that you were able to share that with us today. Thanks, Bec.
Likewise, thank you.
Well, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining in to the Child Charmer podcast. I hope that by joining this conversation, I've been able to inspire and empower you to go out and continue striving for better educational outcomes for our kids. If you're keen to learn more about the work that I'm doing in education, feel free to take a look at my website, www.chaostocalmconsultancy.com. And who knows, maybe I can come out and spread a little Chrissy magic in your school community. Until then.